Chapter 16. High Charity, Waning Hours, 23rd Age of Doubt. Nights in High Charity's main dome were normally quite subdued. The guttural clamor of the Ungoy's mass evening prayers sometimes filtered up from the lower districts, but otherwise the upper towers were quiet. The Sanshum, who called the floating towers home, preferred to spend the hours between sundown and sunup resting or in quiet contemplation. But not tonight, Fortitude thought. The minister's chair hung motionless between two empty antigrav barges, idling near one of the Forerunner dreadnoughts' three massive support struts. The dome's illumination disk shone with a feeble glow, simulating moonlight, which did nothing to warm the air. Fortitude gathered his crimson robes tight around his hunched shoulders and stared at the rare commotion in the towers. Lights blazed in the building's hanging gardens. Rings of gaily dressed Sanshum glided from one open-air party to the next. There was music on the breeze, overlapping strains of triumphal strings and chimes. Here and there, fireworks crackled, blooming sparks in the prevailing darkness. All this marked a momentous occasion, one that only came once or twice an age. Tonight, all female Sanshum lucky enough to bear children were proudly showing off their broods. And as far as Fortitude could tell, the numbers were particularly good. Even though he himself had never sired a successor, and despite all that weighed upon him, he managed a satisfied smile. There were a little more than 20 million Sanshum in the Covenant, not a very large number compared to the faith's billions of adherents, but it was significantly more than the 1,000 or so individuals who had fled the Sanshum's distant homeworld long ago. Fortitude's ancestors had broken with the rest of their kind over the same issue that would eventually pit them against the Sangheili, whether or not to desecrate Forerunner objects to realize their full potential. In the internal Sanshum version of this debate, the dreadnought had become a key symbol for both sides, an object the majority Stoics would not enter, and the minority reformers were desperate to explore. At the climax of the fratricidal conflict, the most zealous reformers breached the dreadnought and barricaded themselves inside. While the Stoics debated what to do, they couldn't very well destroy the object they so revered, the reformers activated the vessel and took flight, taking a chunk of the Sanshum homeworld with it. At first, the reformers were ecstatic. They had survived, and also escaped with the conflict's greatest prize. They sped out of their home system, laughing at the Stoics' bitter signals, claims that the gods would surely damn them for their theft. But then the reformers counted up their numbers and realized to their horror that they might indeed be doomed. The problem was a limited pool of genes. With only 1,000 individuals in their population, inbreeding would soon become a serious problem. The crisis was compounded by the fact that Sanshum pregnancies were, even under ideal conditions, rare. Females were generally fertile, but only in short cycles that came few and far between. For these first prophets aboard the dreadnought, reproduction quickly became a carefully managed affair. "I had begun to think you might not come," Fortitude said, as the Vice Minister of Tranquility's chair slunk in between the barges. The younger Sanshum's purple robes were rumpled, and as he bowed forward in his chair, the gold rings in his wattle became tangled in one of the many flowered garlands around his neck. "I apologize. It was hard to get away." "Male or female?"
"One of each."
"Congratulations."
"If I hear that one more time, I shall scream. It's not as if I made the bastards."
Tranquility's words were a little slurred, and his fingers fumbled as he pulled his wattle free, yanked the garlands from his neck, and tossed them aside.
"You're drunk,"
Fortitude said, watching the garlands flutter down into the darkness.
"So I am. I need you sober."
Fortitude reached inside his robes and removed a small pharmaceutical sphere.
"How was our dear Hierarch, the Prophet of Restraint?"
"You mean the Father?" The Vice Minister sucked the sphere between his sour lips.
"Glared at me the whole time."
Fortitude raised a dismissive hand.
"As long as we act quickly, there's little he can do."
The Vice Minister shrugged and lazily chewed his sphere.
come. Fortitude tapped the hollow switches in his chair's arm. We're late enough as it is. A moment later, the two San Shion were speeding toward the dreadnought's pinched middle decks, a squat triangular core that connected its three support legs to a single vertical hull of similar shape. In the dome's wan light, the ancient Forerunner warship shone bone white. Blackmail, the minister sighed, was such a tiresome tool. But before his peerless record of service and the revelation of the reliquary won them their hierarch's thrones, Fortitude knew the throne's current occupants would have to move aside. And they won't do that unless I push. Unfortunately, the prophet of tolerance and the prophetess of obligation had proven quite unassailable. The elderly prophetess had just given birth to a pair of triplets. Because of her advanced age, pregnancy had been difficult, and while it was true that this had caused her to shirk some of her responsibilities, Fortitude knew it would be suicidal to try to smear one of the Sanxiom's most beloved and prolific matrons.